Greetings and welcome to A Fireside Chat. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight's focus is on quantum healing. We have a wonderful guest, Dr. Michael Wayne, who has a PhD in quantum integral medicine and has just written a book by that name. In addition, he is the creator of Idea Lab, dedicated to using creative intelligence and quantum thinking to develop new and emerging ideas. Dr. Wayne has also worked as a filmmaker, lecturer, and teaches a class in psychoneuroimmunology. I was hoping I'd get that right. Let's welcome Dr. Wayne to our show. Hello, Doctor. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm very good. Thank you very much, and thank you for letting me be on your show.
Well, you know, I've been reading your book, and it's quite an ambitious and well-written work. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I was thinking that just to clue the audience in, maybe you could begin with an overview of what quantum integral medicine is.
Well, I'll start by saying why I wrote the book, because it came out of my own clinical practice and wondering what held people back from healing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, thinking of all these different reasons, and what I finally came to is the biggest issue that holds people back is just our thinking process, because
mm-hmm.
we're so ingrained in this, you would call it Newtonian, just the older way of seeing things.
Uh-huh.
And what I was then, and that led me to put forth that this whole quantum paradigm really helps explain so much. And then I started getting into what's called the integral approach and then combining it. So really what I was getting at is that trying to integrate science and spirituality, showing that the quantum sciences really are the groundbreaking way that shows how life really is living, and it's not that very difficult to get our minds, get our bodies in that direction. And so I tried to lay out kind of a very rational case for showing how we can go there,
mm-hmm.
and in doing so, maximize our own innate healing system and maximize our human potential to the utmost.
Mm-hmm. How do you actually apply that in your own work with patients?
Well, what I try to do, I start very basically just listening to the person, and not only listening to their words, but listening to the cadences of the rhythm of their words, and looking at their body language, and just trying to understand, because what I'm trying to do is find an opening into them
mm.
that allows them to access their own capabilities. And what
mm.
I think it comes down to is finding a resonance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a quote in the back of my book, and it's also on the inside, from Albert Schweitzer,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "Each patient carries his own doctor inside him.
Mm-hmm.
They come to us not knowing that truth. We are at our best when we give the doctor who resides within each patient a chance to go to work." So that's so true. We all have that capability, and when you go see a healer, whatever their modality, that person is just a facilitator to help the person open up to their own capability. So that, in a nutshell, is what I'm trying to do, is help a person open up to their own capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that there are some people who are so linear oriented or closed-minded that this kind of approach might not be applicable?
Well, so that's going back to what I was saying, why I wrote the book, that's what I was wondering about, because I was seeing that, and I thought, is this some sort of karmic thing, or people just held back? So yes and no. I on the one hand, I'm an optimist and believe that as long as a person is alive and breathing and has a pulse, they have the ability.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's what I was saying, too, that the biggest impediment to start to healing most of the time is ourselves and our,
mm-hmm.
our way we think.
Mm-hmm.
So there are going to be people who are just going to say, "Phooey, this is not for me."
Yeah.
I remember an older gentleman who came to see me at the urging of his son, and he came in, and the first thing he said to me, he said, "Oh, I don't believe in acupuncture."
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Well, it is a few thousand years old." And he said, "Well, there's a lot of things that are a few thousand years that don't work."
and I
was stumped. I couldn't really think of what's been around a few thousand years that maybe religion, perhaps.
Yes.
I wasn't going to get into the debate with him. So so needless to say, he never came to see me again.
Right.
So perhaps, but you know, being a skeptic doesn't necessarily stop a person from healing.
Right.
It's just a matter of, doesn't help all the time.
Yeah. Now, you do acupuncture, right?
That's my primary modality, acupuncture, Chinese, herbal medicine, Chinese medicine. But in a way, I'm going much broader now and feel I do practice integrative medicine with mm-hmm. the Chinese medicine bent. But really, I work with a person there. I kind of counsel and coach them in lifestyle, and I'm working with their diet and also just looking at the whole person, basically. And and I think any good healer is really an educator first and foremost. So that's what we all should be trying to do, is help educate the person.
Mm-hmm.
So even in my book, I was in a way trying to educate the layperson and the health person. And actually, when I wrote the book, my biggest audience I was thinking I was writing for were physicians.
Yes.
And that's why I was very, there's so many citations and the bibliography is very long, because I wanted to show that I'm backing up everything I say, and there's good reason for everything that I was saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things I liked about it, is that at the end of each chapter, you actually have references, quite extensive references.
Yeah.
And it's not all kind of shoved off to the back. You can see that there's been a lot of research and work done on the book.
Yeah, I put a lot of effort into it, and really, as I said, it started from the basic premise, and I wasn't necessarily thinking I was writing a book. I was just trying to see how I could better serve people I was working with, but it started leading me onto all these interrelated threads, and the light bulb kept going off in my head as I saw this, and I just said, I'm not stopping till I see how all the threads are connected.
Yeah, that's fun. Can you tell us a little bit about Chinese medicine and how it works? I know that that it works with energies that flow and meridians and stuff like that, but I'm not well versed in it. Maybe
right.
You could talk a little bit about, some of that area.
Well, Chinese medicine is quite profound, and I don't say that just because I have a bias. I believe that wholeheartedly. It's very sophisticated. It started perhaps 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years ago. The date isn't exact known.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing, for those who study quantum physics, you can see the similarity between the quantum paradigm and the Chinese medical paradigm.
Uh-huh.
So Chinese medicine starts with a very basic premise understands that the body is a component of qi. Qi energy is what makes up the body, and that illness comes into effect when the qi is not flowing well. So it starts with a very basic premise, and then it gets more complicated from there, but that's what the Chinese medicine doctor has tried to understand, is where is the qi not flowing, why is the qi not flowing well, and what can be done to help the qi flow.
So
the Chinese medicine doctor has a few tools at their disposal. Acupuncture is one, Chinese herbs are another, qigong medicine is another, dietary suggestions is another. So there's a number of different modalities at use as we try and help a person, just basically help their qi flow better, and in that regard, help their health become better.
It does seem that they're more advanced in the subtle fields, especially since quantum physics is beginning to acknowledge that there is something that is not necessarily measurable, but that is there, like spirit.
Right, and so that was a big breakthrough in the scientific realm of that breakthrough of in quantum physics. But that's what Chinese medicine understood since the beginning of its development, that there's an energetic realm, a subtle realm. It's, Chinese medicine is pretty much the grandfather of energy medicine, and all energy medicine stems from it. It firmly understood there's gray areas in the body, and these are the energetic areas. And so what happens is oftentimes when a person comes to see me, they don't feel well, but on paper they look fine. Their blood work might be fine. If they've had MRIs or x-rays, they all don't show a problem, but they know they're not well, and that's because it's not Western medicine deals with the black and whites. Either you show up not well or you show up well, where Chinese medicine deals with the gray areas of this energetic aspect, which cannot show up on any sort of diagnostic screening exam.
Well, I know for myself that whenever something is off even a little bit, I do notice subtle changes, and if I listen to my body, usually I can isolate it and I can tell what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think everybody has that capability, but I wanted to ask you about the use of pharmaceuticals. It seems like that traditional medicine here in the West treats everything as a symptom, and that there's such a big push to buy medicine, which is very expensive, that there's almost a mass hypnosis going on. Is that something that you found yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And in my book, I lay it out, as I was saying, I try to lay it out logically, and the first part of the book is kind of an analysis of what's wrong with the Western modern medical model and the drug model. And I talk about drugs because it's pernicious, and it's not doing anybody a service. It doesn't take care of the common good.
Yeah.
It's just pushing drugs.
Yeah.
And we can't just blame the doctor. It's not just the doctors pushing it, because people also are clamoring for it. So, but of course, you know, they're hypnotized, mesmerized into wanting it. There's the mass media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so many ads, you know, telling them what all the different drugs to do for their different things. And it's a machine that just keeps pumping it out.
And it seems like it's getting more thorough and better at doing that.
Yeah, advertising is that's the job of advertising. A lot of creative minds work in advertising.
Really. What role does consciousness play in healing?
Well, that's the missing link in a way. I mean, in modern medicine, Western medicine, there is no role for consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
There's no role for the mind. And because it's so compartmentalized, if there's any mind issues, you go to a mind doctor, a psychiatrist.
Right.
But consciousness is really the most important aspect of who we are and what the universe is. And I think quantum physics, once again, talking about quantum physics, points the way in the direction. Consciousness is pure information. It's full of chi, full of energy, and it makes up the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the most primordial force in the universe. And that's why in quantum physics it's understood there are non-local connections.
Mm-hmm.
There are
mm-hmm.
we have the ability to be connected at distances that span infinite distances and are connected at speeds faster than the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understood information consciousness transcends the whole space-time barriers. So with consciousness, we're just really on the cutting edge of understanding how to, not only the nature of consciousness, but how to evolve our consciousness
mm-hmm.
and what we can do with it.
You know, I do. I've been doing remote healing with a small group of healers that
mm-hmm.
on the internet, and I found that the results that have occurred from just that group being together for the last 7 or 8 years
uh-huh.
is phenomenal. They're actually miraculous recoveries,
uh-huh.
and so maybe that ties into what you just said about consciousness and non-locality. Remote healing would work through that connection, yes or no?
Right. That's one of the ways we can explain the distance healing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and especially if it's a group, are you working with a group sending energy or your
yes.
group? Yeah. So that group consciousness is always groups are always stronger than the singular. It just adds more and more levels of potentiality.
Mm-hmm.
But. That non-locality is really a very good explanation for understanding the nature of distance capabilities, and that our minds have non-local capabilities. And I have a story in my book I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting story. It partly asks questions about the nature of healing, and it kind of touches on non-local capabilities, but it's a story about the Dr. Lawrence LeShan, who's one of the pioneers of mind-body medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the story I have in my book comes from a book he wrote called The Medium, The Mystic, and The Physicist, which
mm-hmm.
I think was in 1966. goes in his own research.
Uh-huh.
But he tells the story of a man who came to him, because Lawrence Lachan was doing was a pioneer in this and doing distance healing work. So a man came to him and asked Lawrence Lachan to do a distance healing for a painful condition that the man had that was going to require surgery, immediate surgery and intensive surgery, and he was going to have it within a few days. And they set a time for later that day, that evening, once they were in communication with each other. And then Lawrence Lachan, a couple days went by, and Lawrence Lachan got a phone call from the man telling him that it was a miracle and he was cured and he no longer needed to have the surgery. And then the doctors called him and they were all impressed and they wanted his notes because they wanted to write it up in medical journals. Uh-huh. And they were saying this will be the healing case of the century. And Lawrence Lachan goes on to write and said it would have been the healing case of the century except for one small detail. And he says, in the press of overwork, I forgot to do the healing. And he said, so he kind of makes fun of it, but it's a very fascinating thing. A skeptic would read that and say, oh, so the man just had some sort of placebo effect.
Uh-huh.
But in a way, the man did his own, using his own consciousness and kind of distance our consciousness in what we call quantum consciousness,
uh-huh,
by tapping into the infinite capabilities of the universe to heal himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about this just before about resonance and how, mm-hmm, I feel that's a really important part of the healing.
Mm-hmm.
Just the man just knowing that he was going to have that healing done opened up his own resonance, his own channels to allow the healing to occur.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fascinating story, and I think, you know, distance healing, even though distance healing is a definite phenomenon, there may be something in that, in any sort of healing, that kind of resonance-type activity that goes on. I call it emergence, and by the end of my book, I start talking about the science of emergence, because there's some, this concept of emergence where something new emanates from the body is what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. Some people seem to think that we create our own illnesses as messages to ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Have you found that to be true with some of your patients?
Well, yes and no. It's a tricky thing, okay. And I think a lot of people are trying to get away from that of saying, because on the one hand, it's easy to then say, you created this, and start almost like blaming the victim.
Right.
So I try to watch out for that.
Okay.
But on the other hand, what I try to do is help a person listen to see what is the illness telling you about yourself so that you can help yourself to become healthy. Because some of the things that occur we may not have control over. I mean, there's so many factors that make a person ill. Especially,
right,
when we're talking mainly about chronic illness. Acute illness, it could be, you know, any number of things that are usually quick and passing, but a chronic illness, which is what Western modern medicine has the problems with.
Uh-huh.
So many factors that make it up, and so people will, but yes, people will create most of their problems. But I try to turn into a positive of helping a person then see what is it that your body's trying to tell you, and how can you move on to new higher levels of potentiality,
because
I think that's what the body's trying to tell you, is shed the old skin and,
right.
You know, rise, be the phoenix and rise from the ashes.
Right. And on the other side of breakdown is breakthrough.
Right. And emergence. I mean, it's all, mm-hmm, about emergence. So,
let's see, what was I going to ask you? Oh, yes. Why is there so much disagreement and fragmentation in the medical community, you think?
Well, you know, we talked about Chinese medicine, and Chinese medicine stems from a philosophy of this kind of philosophy of Taoist or holism. And so Western medicine, Western science also stems from a philosophy, and the Western mindset is more of compartmentalizing, analytical thinking, breaking things down. And so in Western medicine, everything has been broken down, the specialties and all the specialists don't necessarily talk to each other, so there's so much conflicting information that comes, and people take all kinds of different drugs. But the body is just, the body is viewed as a machine, and as a machine, it's seen that occasionally breaks down, so it's almost like it's just another plumbing situation. You just come in, bring a contractor in, fix it up, and maybe it's the roof, bring a roofer in, or if it's the flooring or whatever. But the body is not a machine.
No.
That's the problem.
What do you think is the cause of illness?
So, again, I think there's many causes. I think modern medicine primarily is a physical medicine. It just looks at the physical cause of medicine, of illness, and that's one reason. So germs, bacteria, public health, injury, stress on the body. But besides being physical beings, we're also emotional beings, we're spiritual beings, we're energetic beings. So illness, so usually there's an imbalance in all those levels. Chinese medicine has a term for chronic ailment. They call it the knotty diseases, like a knot, K-N-O-T, knotty diseases. And the concept is basically that it's like a knot in the body where everything starts to bind. So it's almost as if all these imbalances, the emotional body and the spiritual body and the physical body, just start all get tangling up. So then it's hard to know which came first, the chicken or the egg, because everything becomes bound up. So in a way, you know, as you know, we have to try and start helping a person kind of peel away the layers. You know, so I work with a person, I'm trying to help them make sure they're eating well, because that's like an important component of health, and just becoming more in touch with their feelings, becoming more mindful, exercising, all the things that the formula isn't that difficult, but all these things that the formula to help a person kind of unbind. And people who have profound healings usually work at it. They usually do a number of things to help the unbinding. You know, unfortunately, people who have profound healings from cancer or any sort of long-term chronic ailment in Western medicine, it's almost derogatively called spontaneous healing, as if it was just some lightning bolt hit them and all of a sudden they're better. But people generally do something. I mean, the annals of medical journals of stories of people who have profound healings, there are cases of people who did really have almost miraculous healings. But I think even miraculous healings, there's a reason that perhaps not through modern Western science it can be easily explained, but through these quantum sciences, these so-called new sciences, we can give a rationale for understanding what the process was.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe miracles are a result of a higher dimension working in a lower one.
Right. That's so true. We're a microcosm of the larger universe. We reflect it. We're made up of it. So, and the universe has infinite potential, infinite energy. So, in a way, this is what the most forward-thinking scientists have tried to figure out: is how can we tap into that universal energy? The quantum scientists call it the quantum vacuum, and they know it's teeming. This quantum vacuum is teeming with infinite energy. I mean, the one of the most forward scientists of the last 100 years was Nikola Tesla, and he was trying to figure out how we can tap into this universal energy and light and be the source of electricity. He never could figure that out, but hopefully one day that day will come.
Yeah, some people seem to think that he might have been in communication with advanced beings somehow.
It's quite possible. He was a mystic. All the great thinkers, Albert Einstein and so on, were mystics. They touched onto something.
Oh, absolutely. Tell us about Einstein's brain.
Oh, the story of Einstein's brain.
That was very funny.
It's uncanny. And it kind of, again, shows the way of modern scientific thinking. And again, I'm not putting down scientific thinking because it's critical. Its ability to critically think and logically break things apart is one of its strengths and sometimes its weakness. But what happened with Einstein is after he died, I mean, he was just a brilliant genius, man, a mystic, a creative genius. No one would deny that. And interestingly enough, he was the founder of quantum physics. But when he died, the pathologist kept his brain because he figured this would be a great contribution to science if it could be figured out what was it that made Einstein the genius. And he figured there'd be somewhere in that brain that would give the answer. So again, this is like the black and white Western science, modern scientific way of seeing it, that there had to be some anatomical reason, some thorough anatomical reason for why Einstein was such a genius. And he would, over the years, he took pieces of brain and he shipped them out to other pathologists and other neurologists and other anatomists, each one trying to help figure the puzzle out. But no one truly ever figured it out. They found that in areas of his brain that are so-called switching stations where ideas coalesce, they thought that might have been the reason, but that wasn't it either. And so I go into this in my book, and I have my book on my looking at it because I want to find the quote in that section. So as I said, they never discovered in his brain a reason. There just was nothing there. It was just a brain. But, I mean, just a very brilliant brain.
Well, yes.
And so what I said was that more insight probably came from Einstein himself. For anyone who's read any of Einstein's quotes, he just had so many brilliant quotes. But at one time he was asked how his thought processes worked. And he gave this answer, and this would have saved the pathologist and all the scientists many years of work. And he said that words and language, whether written or spoken, do not seem to play any part in my thought processes. The psychological entities that serve as building blocks for my thought are certain signs or images, more or less clear, that I can reproduce and recombine at will. So basically what Einstein was saying was that he wasn't a linear thinker. He was a visual thinker. He thought in a different manner. And that's why he was so horrible in school, and everybody thought he was retarded, and he was just working in a patent office. He was a civil servant when he made his brilliant discoveries.
Wow.
Because he thought differently. That's why there's the famous Apple computer used his picture in one of their ads for their ad that said, "Think different." A picture of Einstein, because he was the classic example of that. He was a man who used his brain in this quantum way to think in such a broad way. So that was the answer of why it wasn't in his brain, the structure of the brain. Modern science will never find it there.
Right.
It was his ability to just see. He was a man of vision. And one of the themes I talk about in my book towards the end is that we all have that capability of vision, and it's just a matter of using our capabilities and using our potential more so than we do, because we use perhaps 1-3% of our potential.
How do you think we can tap into some of that creative potential?
So this is, I go into my book, and I even have a chapter in my book called Creativity and Quantum Thinking. And I think quantum thinking is, what's considered quantum thinking is really the key. And the concept of quantum thinking comes from the understanding of consciousness and quantum consciousness, and that is that, as we were saying before, the universe is really just one big. I mean, Eastern philosophy talks about the universe as they call it universal mind, but the universe is just one large mind. It's full of consciousness and information. And we are, as we were saying also before, we are a microcosm of that. So we are full of information and consciousness. And we have this great capability to think, to be as broad as we want. And that's why one of the, as I was following all the different threads, one of the threads I was following was reading creativity researchers, people who work in that field, and some of their research was interviewing people who are considered creative geniuses, every person is a creative genius when you get down to it, but asking people who've come up with interesting ideas, where their ideas came from. And most people who've come up with ideas, brilliant ideas, ideas that have been called brilliant ideas, they almost sound like mystics, because they'll say, oh, either came to me in a dream or just came to me in a flash, you know, the old aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, but those aha moments are tapping into that quantum consciousness, that universal mind, and that's what we all have. I think I may have given the story in my book. Of a man by the name of Steven Weinberg, who's a famous Nobel Prize-winning physicist, and he came up with one of the groundbreaking theory that dealt with the four forces of nature. And he is a self-admitted materialist. He believes in no spiritual nature of the universe, no spiritual deep meaning of the universe. But he had this profound findings come to him, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize Nobel Prize for Physics, for it. And he gives the story that he was, at the time he was teaching at MIT in Boston, and he was driving his car on a warm day, it was a convertible, down the street. He stopped, and it just hit him, the idea, all the connections and putting forth the idea. I mean, that, to me, that's deep spiritual, profound significance, but scoffs it off. But it really was tapping into that universal consciousness, that quantum consciousness. So we all have that capability, and it's really all about just, in one way, letting go, just relaxing, letting the mind have a chance to breathe, putting space between your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of what gets in the way is language. And that we're trained to, think in certain ways and to use words that are labels for the real thing. And I kind of have a feeling that contemporary education isn't working right. What are your views on that?
Oh yeah, that's an outstanding point, and I discuss education because, in a way, language is an interesting thing because it's what we use to identify. That's why one of the interesting, the improved use of language in the East is that they're more, they speak in pictograms, more ideas than linear words. But that's not to put down Western languages. But the issue with education is that it's, in a way, it's self-perpetuating in that we go through our school system and taught in a very linear way, and then we become adults. Some of us become teachers, and we keep teaching that same way, and the same school system way has just continued for 100 years, or as long as this universal education system has been around. But it teaches critical thinking skills, which I've mentioned before is one of the strengths of scientific thinking, and that's good. But it doesn't teach creative thinking skills, and that's where it goes wrong, because it teaches the use of language in a very finite aspect. That language means what it means and doesn't mean anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps kids should just be learning poetry, and that's all they should be doing from kindergarten to the end of high school or something.
It does seem that the language tends to create a materialistic view of things.
Yeah. I know the Waldorf school philosophy is not to teach reading till, I think, second grade. So I think that's part of the philosophy behind it, is not to get people too locked into their thinking too quick, not to get too linear in the mindset.
How might the paranormal fit into the quantum paradigm?
Well, the paranormal slides in real easy, and the quantum sciences really can help explain these kind of things, because the paranormal is, a lot of it is about intuition and the use of distance healing. I mean, paranormal can sometimes is an umbrella term sometimes for all kinds of things that can't be explained by Western science, by modern logic. But it really, again, like we were talking about before, this quantum consciousness or this non-locality of the universe where minds are connected at distances shows how the paranormal capabilities of intuition, of extrasensorial sensory perception, of remote viewing. Remote viewing is interesting. Remote viewing came out of the Cold War. I mean, it was developed in this country in the Cold War because in the former Soviet Union, which has always been very, the science has always been very parapsychology, embracing parapsychology and paranormal, but they were using it, the remote viewing, where they would have people at it, see things at a distance. They would be in let's say, an office in the Soviet Union, and they'd be remote viewing, taking their mind beyond time and space to view military installations in the United States, and then draw them or just explain where they are. So once the United States got wind of this, we started training people. There was a Stanford Research Institute out of Stanford that was the CIA ran to do the same thing. And it was only years later they finally declassified information, and the physicist Russell Targ wrote a book on about it, because he was one of the people involved in it. So that was paranormal also. So it's always been part of our lives. I mean, you could say synchronicity is paranormal, but maybe that's normal, and what's paranormal is modern science in a way.
Right. Some people seem to believe that synchronicity is our natural state, and that, you know, that we're out of sync with our synchronicity.
Right. I mean, synchronicity is really about messages from the universe, messages from the quantum realm, whatever word you want to use. But in a way, it's the universe calling us, trying to help our inner pulse and our inner pendulum and steer us in the right direction. Because I think that's what the... You know, sometimes we get a little carried away and think, oh, I can get, some people appropriate quantum physics to say, whatever I think with my mind will come true. But I think it's more, you know, like as the Rolling Stones saying, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you'll get what you need.
Because
the universe is calling us in a direction, but our egos think it's the direction we want. It's calling us in a direction that's taking us towards the infinite, and those synchronicities help point us. But then we have to kind of let things occur and see where it takes us, and not let the impediments and the roadblocks block us from getting there.
And it seems like there's a letting go process that's involved in that too, and not trying to control the outcome.
Right, and that's another big thing about Western science, Western medicine. It's all about control, and everything is predictable. And that mindset takes us to war, took us to this current war, because we believed the outcome was predictable and everything would be easy. But complexity, life is full of chaos and complexity, and things happen that we can't always predict. But that leads to fear, because, and that's why people want to predict and control, because they want to be assured that they feel more safe if they know what could happen. But chaos can seem scary because, you know, it seems like when there's chaos, we don't know what's going to happen. But in mathematics, chaos theory tells us that order comes out of chaos. And so chaos leads to a new order, a new life. And that's where if we let go, let's ride the surf, ride the waves, it takes us to new levels. And in a way, you could say sickness is chaos. But if we cultivate our own inner healing capabilities, we will go to new levels of existence, of life. So, but we have to to let go and not control.
Do you think that spirituality affects one's ability to heal at all, or does it seem to come into play? Or is that another variable that yes sometimes and no sometimes?
Well, you know, spirituality, I think it does, and I think innate healing becomes, or profound healing becomes a very spiritual process,
uh-huh.
and ultimately all healing is spiritual. The right. reason I hesitated first is because spirituality can be defined in many different
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
Some people, their spirituality is going to church.
Right.
Other people, it's meditating or praying
right.
in a non-denominational or at home. And other people, it's just everyday life. They can find the spiritual nature of just being mindful and joyous.
Right.
So
right.
so all are correct, but it's just how can we translate that into everyday life?
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, the nature of the universe is spiritual, so it's really tapping into the spiritual nature of the entire universe and
uh-huh.
our innate healing capability is, as I was saying, it's a spiritual process. And that's where I think that the deepest, as I say, the deepest profound healings are spiritual, because people become much more spiritual in nature when they go through a profound healing. And,
mm-hmm.
and again, however that translates and however they interpret their spiritual life, their new spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one piece of research I didn't write in my book, but I came across was people who have near-death experiences
uh-huh.
and lives tell a tale, and you know, some of us have read books about near-death
oh, yeah.
experiences. but the statistic I came across was people who have near-death experiences, 75% of them get divorced or just change their life radically, so divorce or change friends. Just do things differently, because what it was saying was that people who go through these near-death experiences have had a profound change. The great majority of people will never be the same again.
Mm-hmm.
They see life
mm-hmm.
profoundly different, but everyone else around them doesn't see the thing. Most of the people that life they lived no longer is fully relevant for them,
mm-hmm.
and so the great majority of them have. They feel compelled to move on to something different
mm-hmm.
And change their life in a very profound manner.
Absolutely.
So they become, you could say, more connected to the spiritual nature of the universe, and then they interpret it whatever way works for them.
Mm-hmm. It seems that there's a similarity between the experiences as well, that they, not necessarily in the actual events, but there's a thread that runs through all of them. You know, in terms of information and tapping into having all their questions answered, and there's most definitely a connection with something higher.
Right. I mean, that's the nature of the universe. There's and the integral approach is about that we're all evolving towards spirit. Is Ken Wilber, who's a very eloquent writer about integral approach. He has mentioned in his book a few times a saying, and he's not the one who coined it, but he says that spirit goes from slumbering in nature to awakening in mind to realizing itself as spirit. So in a way, we're spirit, as the police song, Sting in the Police song, when we're all spirits in the material world,
uh-huh.
so it's just a matter of realizing ourselves as spirit, and connecting ourselves to that greater oneness.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, and some people say that we're all one, and that the idea that we're separate is an illusion.
Right.
So that would mean that the idea of war and killing and fighting other people, we're really fighting ourselves.
Right. I mean, it's a very sad aspect about that, of war, and because we all have cultural differences,
right.
languages. There's different barriers, but ultimately, we're all the same. We have so many of the same traits.
Yeah, yeah.
It
seems that there should always be a peaceful solution to situations, but, you know, we are going through some kind of evolutionary process, so, you know, maybe this is the final purging of our need to destroy each other.
Yeah, I've wondered about that, too. It's you hope that it's this paradigm of this very split, that paradigm where it sees things in very black and white terms is
mm-hmm.
starting to be taken over by a more holistic paradigm, and as it does so, there'll be less of the need to go to war over
mm-hmm.
issues.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, even when this war started, this recent war in Iraq, there was a great, I mean, the outpouring around the world was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So people.
And it's been growing again.
Yeah.
So, and evidently, you know, if the elections are any indication, you know, the people do believe that it's not the right direction to go in.
Right.
You know. There's another interesting thing going on, too, during our time. Some people feel that there's an acceleration going on and that it is tied into the Mayan prophecies that are taking us into 2012 and some kind of, you know, quantum change there. Uh-huh. Are you familiar with that?
Right, yeah.
What do you think? What's your take?
Well, it's definitely speculation.
Yeah.
Whether it will be 2012 or 2013 or 2020 or whatever.
Or 2007.
Yeah, but I believe, I mean, in many ways we're pointing towards a movement towards an emergence of a higher consciousness, a spiritual emergence.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about it in the last chapter of last two chapters of my book, or towards the end. I talk about this, how it seems we are going in that way. Of course, we can't just sit on the couch and say, "Oh, we're going that way, so all is good." Let's just wait it out. I mean, we all have to be proactive towards that.
Right.
But it seems like the general direction of the universe is that way. And many people are saying that, and when I was writing, one of the pieces of research I did was studying this concept of emergence,
uh-huh.
And I was studying, reading books by scientists who talk about emergence, and again, these are not spiritual-minded people, but they were all talking about the great, what they were all saying is that there's been a number of great general emergences,
uh-huh.
emergence throughout the course of humanity or the universe.
Uh-huh.
The first was just the emergence of biological life, or actually the emergence of the universe and planets. Then there was the emergence of biological life. Then there was the emergence of the mind, and that's the level where we're at now. We're uh-huh. seeing the greater capabilities of the mind. But then what some of these scientists were saying is the next great emergence will be the emergence of spirit, because it's if you read it or if you understand it, it makes sense that we're working in that kind of evolutionary way
mm-hmm.
towards more greater and greater human capabilities. So more and more we're going to tap into that quantum consciousness, and that I think is the spiritual emergence, and that's why the last chapter of my book I talk about the further reaches of healing and human potential, and I talk about what we might. Some of it is speculation where we might go as species,
mm-hmm.
But I think it makes, and I don't think it's science fiction what I write about. I think it's in that chapter. I think it makes sense when we understand evolution, or we could call it evolutionary emergence,
uh-huh.
that we're working towards the evolution of spirit, and we're you know, it could be a very exciting time, and because it seems like it's moving faster, the Mayans might be the ones they might have. Nailed it on the head. It might be 2012.
Well, I hope so. We're around to see.
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope it's the emergence of something new and good, and because, you know, it's also the possibility, you know, the opposite can also be true.
Well, yes, there's a lot going on in terms of global warming, which some people say doesn't exist, and Earth changes, and so on and so forth, and, you know, we're going to have to raise our level of consciousness in order to, you know, deal with some of these things, I think.
Right. There's a book called Collapse by Jared Diamond, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian for his earlier book, which I think was called Guns, Germs, and Steel. But the book Collapse, what he does is he surveys a lot of cultures, traditional cultures throughout the world over time. He talks about the Mayans and all these different cultures, and he talked about why they collapse, why these different cultures collapse.
Uh-huh.
And he said his generalization is what happened was that most civilizations, as they became more and more mature, kind of split into two camps. One camp were those who were looking out for their own special interests,
right.
And the other were those who were looking out for the greater common good.
Right.
And the civilizations that collapsed were those that the people who are looking out for their own interests and their own needs became the predominant force,
right,
and ultimately took everyone down.
Right.
So that's where we can hope that the people who are looking for the common good, which are most of us, as our consciousness and capabilities expand, we will be the predominant energy people and keep things going in a better way.
Absolutely.
But you know, as you pointed out, those who say there is no global warming are you know, I believe are those who are looking out for their own special interests, and we don't want to go the way as some other cultures went.
No, definitely not.
No.
Would tell us where your website is so that people can visit you on the website.
Oh, my website is quantumintegralcenter.com. Quantumintegralcenter.com. You could also find it by going to drmichaelwayne.com. So it's an easier way to type in Dr. D-R than Michael Wayne.
Okay.
.com. To find out more about my book or to order it, you can go to it's the book page of my website. It's ithinkbooks.com, the letter I, ithinkbooks.com. The current issue of the magazine Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine, the November-December 2006 issue, has an excerpt from my book in it. It's just hitting the newsstands now, and I'm not sure if on their website if they posted the current issue or if they even would have the excerpt on their website. So that's the way if people are interested in reading an excerpt from my book. And then my distributor has an 800 number for anyone interested to order it. 800-431-1579, 800-431-1579, and then on the online booksellers like Amazon also have it listed.
And if anybody missed that, you can always go to the BBC Radio website and click on today's show, and I have Dr. Wayne's bio with a link to his website.
Oh, great.
So, and that I usually leave those up for a few days after the show until my next guest is on. So,
oh, great.
Let's change the subject a little bit since we have a few minutes to kind of play around here. What is IdeaLab?
IdeaLab. So this was, and there's a page on my website about IdeaLab. And I don't really go into my book, but it's an extension of quantum consciousness. And I wanted to show a practical way to take it from the theoretical to the practical,
mm-hmm,
of
mm-hmm.
how we can use, because we're all, we said it earlier, that we're all creative geniuses. We all have the capability to come up with great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I explain a little bit on the page, the IdeaLab page, but we all have this capability through creative, what we call quantum thinking, tap into the capability. And when I teach classes and do seminars, I always lead people in these exercises. But if we can, and so what I say is, we can cultivate these and come up with ideas that if they have true quantum capabilities, can spread very easily through the general consciousness. And so people are interested in whatever the idea is, whether it's a business idea or a socially oriented idea or technology idea. It's possible for the idea to spread easily.
That almost sounds like the 100th monkey theory.
Right, which, again, is quantum consciousness in a way. It's the ideas. And it's like when a Hollywood movie comes out, sometimes within the space of a short time, a second movie comes out by another production company with the same idea, or books. And it's because ideas, they're consciousness, and they're seeds, and these seeds float through the universal sphere, and they can be picked up. It's like we all have antenna to pick it up, and we can pick it up. So that's what the IdeaLab is about, is using the capabilities, tapping into the quantum consciousness, and then putting it forward. And as I said, it's a practical way to show how these theoretical concepts have a lot of pragmatic validity.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't make something practical, then, you know.
That's where you need practice and theory. There's always the balance between the two.
Well, Doctor, you know, we're just about out of time here.
Yeah, well.
I can't believe it. That hour went by like a lightning bolt.
we could go on here.
Well, it was a wonderful interview, and I really thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Lance.
And I'm going to continue reading your book. I haven't quite finished it yet, but it's an excellent book, and
great.
I do recommend it to everybody. And it's called Quantum Integral Medicine, and it's Towards a New Science of Healing and Human Potential by Dr. Michael Wayne.
Right. So people, we've told people how to find my book, or hopefully they'll go on your website, too, to see how to order it.
Absolutely. And we know that Christmas is coming, and you know, and everybody knows somebody that needs to be healed.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Lance. Thank you very much. It's been an honor.
And folks, make sure that you stay tuned and listen to my friend Liz Miller, whose show is called Otherwhere, and it's a wonderful show, and you will be very happy you stay tuned. And that is another show, A Fireside Chat, and this is Lance White saying goodnight.